our learning tonight is going to focus on atmosphere. Because more than the written law, there's the question of the atmosphere that we have in the home. And I want to share with you a bunch of stories, but I just want to remind you, when you can, go see other homes. I said it from the beginning of the class. You could learn much more about what a home is supposed to look like from seeing and experiencing a Shabbos at someone's home than you can from all the classes I could give here. And do me a favor, don't stick to one type of home. Because different types have different pluses and minuses. There was a guy here once who spoke in a certain manner. I don't want to say which type of manner. And I felt initially that I can't set him up with any girl. And he kept asking me, set me up. I felt like the way he talks doesn't fit for any of the girls I know. I mean, I don't think any girl would stand for it. And rightfully so, in my opinion. And then one day I was talking to him, and I said, you know, it dawned on me, maybe you need a girl from this type of Jews. And he said, yeah, that's the house I grew up in. I said, what do you mean? He said, the family that adopted me when I came to Israel is really that type of family. And I realized that there's a certain mannerism, a way of speech, which anywhere else would be considered crude and crass. And it just dawned on me after hearing him talk that way enough times that that's that type of speech. And then I put two and two together. I understood where he got it from. And in truth, we set him up with girls from those Jews who go in those ways. And that worked. But that's unusual. I mean, it's not worth adopting things that you see in a specific place. Look around and see. There are mannerisms that are accepted and mannerisms that aren't. No wife is going to stand for it when you do this to her. It's not going to work. Okay, and if you happen to have seen a home where that worked, that's the quirk. I don't want you to stick to one home. I want you to see many homes. Every home has things that are right, and every home has things that need improvement. And we're speaking about Judaism, the ideal, but we're also speaking about practically how you're going to do it. The Mishnah Brura quotes from the Tur that a person who's careful about doing Kiddush and Havdalah on Shabbos, that's a segula to protect him and his family from intermarrying. Havdalah, when we say a discernment between that which is holy and that which isn't, so in Havdalah we stress that there are a lot of differences in the world, and when we're careful with that, that care affects our home. I'm going to touch on a gentle subject because I know a lot of the people present come from homes where their parents are intermarried. And I apologize if I'm hurting anyone's feelings. I'm not talking to anyone specifically. I'm talking to all of you as future builders of a Jewish home. So do me a favor, take it in that vein, because these are words that you have to hear and you have to know how to apply them in your own lives. We all pray that our homes will be homes that our children enjoy living in and want to come back to. We feel at home and they feel at home, and there's an atmosphere that promotes feeling well, feeling good with Judaism. And we pray that our children do not intermarry. There was a guy who came to a rabbi and said, my father is dating a woman who isn't Jewish. And we don't know what to do. Me and my brother were learning in yeshiva. Our mother died, and now our father's dating this woman, and he wants to bring her home. So the rabbi asked him, I heard this from the rabbi personally, I mean, we're good friends. He asked him, what does your Shabbos table look like? Do you sing Shabbos songs at the table? So the guy said, no. So the rabbi said, why don't you start So the guy said, why? So the rabbi said, if your Shabbos meal is just like any other meal of the week, it's just you're all getting together on Shabbos, anyone can do that. And she can join the family. Because you haven't taken the spirit of Shabbos the way Hashem wants us to have the spirit of Shabbos. You're leaving it like a meal the rest of the week. So then she could join. And your father feels like she could be a part of the family. When you start singing Shabbos songs at your table, when you start bringing in the spirit of Shabbos to your home, then when she'll come, she'll see something else. This isn't a meal like the rest of the week. And this rabbi told over the story to a group of youngsters. He told them the story. And one of the youngsters raised his hand and said, can I tell you the story? So the rabbi said, what? So the guy said, 18, 19-year-old guy, he said, you should know it's the Shabbos that saved me, exactly like you said. So all the group asked him, what do you mean? He said, I was dating a non-Jewish girl, and we were good friends. And we were talking about marriage. And I didn't keep anything. I wasn't keeping kosher. I wasn't keeping anything. But there was one thing we kept in our family. Shabbos. We went to shul on Shabbos. So I told her, why don't you come see what we all do on the weekend? And I invited her. And she came to shul. And she comes into this special place where we don't talk whenever we want. And the women have their own section. And she sits there and I sit downstairs. And after 2 hours, we regrouped. And she said, what'd you do there? And he said, I was with God and I was with my people. And I tried to explain to her what's going on in shul and the beauty and the songs. And she said, I can never connect to that. And over that, she broke up with him. She said, what you value in this world, I don't see any value in. And he said, that's what saved me. Today he's learning in yeshiva. A guy who went from here to there. I'm not talking to you on the spiritual level that the Mishnah Brura quotes from the Tur that the Kiddush and the Avdallah serve. I'm talking on a basic, simple level. About the home we're looking to build with our children and with our spouses. The atmosphere in the home is key, and we all have dreams. So I want to tell you, if we're going to talk about the atmosphere, what is the greatest pitfall to having peace, tranquility in the home and having a good atmosphere. And usually, the common knowledge says that there are three major problems that couples can have. One is over money, two is over intimacy, and three is over family, over in-laws. I'm going to tell you a number four, which I think outdoes number one, two, and three. And that's sleep. Sleep. We live in a generation where there are a lot of good books about how to run a good home. And I've even heard from people a line which I agree with. I mean, they said, why should I come to the class? I've read tens of great books and I know all there is about the theory of running a good home. How's this going to be any different? And I'm not sure the class is any different. I'm not sure I could say anything that you won't find in a book. I'm not looking to say anything you won't find in a book. There are a lot of good books out there and they say a lot of good things. Sometimes you hear a class and you get something you wouldn't have gotten from a book. If this were Torah we were talking about, then I'd say Torah you can't get only from books. Torah you need from teachers. But this isn't Torah. This is a lot of our class is about practicum, about how to build a good home. And I hope we do things here that you won't find in a book, but I'm not convinced. I'm not convinced. But here's something which I don't think many books tell you. And that is that all the theory you know, and a lot of you know a lot of what we're discussing, it's almost impossible to put it into practice when you don't have the patience and the sleep to actually put it into practice. This is all theory. Right now you guys are sitting here and you don't have to apply it. There was a marriage counselor recently who decided to experiment. And when couples came to him, he said, I can charge you X amount of money and we could work for X amount of time and we have a certain percentage chance of succeeding in saving the marriage. Or else, you can try something which I think will be at least as effective, and that is join the experiment that we're doing now. Each of you add a certain number of hours of sleep each night. You'd invest time and money coming to me. Invest the time getting more sleep. And of the couples that agreed to participate in the experiment, over 50%, I don't remember the number, it was in the 60s, did not need counseling afterwards. Over 50%, when they got more sleep, were able to solve their own issues when they got more sleep. Because the theories we could all figure out. We could discuss them and we could learn them. But at the end of the day, in order to apply them, you have to have enough patience. And you have to be with it enough. And this is a key point which I don't know why, but our generation has a very hard time dealing with. Sometimes when I meet with couples, I quote this statistic and I say, why don't you guys try getting another hour of sleep each night? Couples sometimes schlep in from a yeshuv, it's a distance, till they come, till they go back. I say, you guys took 4 hours, you took a whole morning for us to meet for 45 minutes. Why don't you take that time and sleep? Nah, it's not going to work. Okay, you know, I can't make it work. But the truth is, realistically, that over 50%, that's a big number. When we speak about...
In your experience as a husband and a father, is that really hard to get enough sleep? Or is it like, just because of like all this... I mean, that's why... How do you do that? Because it seems like that seems like a simple solution, but from what I understand with like kids, you know, it's like, how do you do that? How do you...
I'm going to tell you an answer which no one's going to like. You guys don't mind because it's not real for you. But the married people who hear this answer are going to get very upset at the answer. The answer is very obvious. It's a question of priorities. Because if, God forbid, a person has a relative who's ill, they find the time to go out there and visit them. And if a couple feels they need counseling, they find the time to go to counseling. And if there's a child that needs special help, they find the time to get the special help. In life, we are constantly making choices about what our priorities are. Do I have to answer email? Do I have to answer the phone? There are a lot of choices we make about where we will invest our time. When I tell someone, why don't you shut your Facebook account? He looks at me and says, you want me to die? He says, my existence is on Facebook. Take me off of Facebook, I don't exist. What do you mean? All my friends. Okay. We make conscious choices, but no one likes to hear that, because our choices include, well, I need time to see the latest whatever show it is, in my day it was Seinfeld, and I need time to call, that doesn't exist anymore, I don't know.
Like 6 years ago.
I need time that we all have our priorities that are very, very important. And what would be so terrible if you didn't call your parents every night? And I'm a fan of calling parents every day, but not at the expense of sleep. I'm a fan of a lot of things, but couples, it's not only couples, it's here at the Machon also. It's one of the big challenges of our generation, that people don't get enough sleep. And it really is a question of priorities, but no one likes to hear that. That's the truth. That's the honest to goodness truth. It's rare that you have someone who's working such long hours and really must do everything he's doing. Most people, it's not that way. You have some people who come to Machon here and stick around here in classes till who knows what hour, almost 10 o'clock at night. But most people, it's not like that. And even those 10 o'clock at night, you know, if you guys would leave after class, 10 o'clock, 10:15, 10:30, take a half hour break, air out, and then at 11 o'clock go hit the sack, you'd still get 7 hours of sleep till 6 o'clock in the morning. And you guys have a break in the afternoon. What's so funny? Okay, sleep till 6:30. I don't care, but I'm saying you know, you can end class at 10:30, still have a half hour, take your breathe time, and still have a life. I mean,
7 hours you think is that time that it's all like a special hour, or how much time someone needs, like
The Rambam says that 8 hours should be enough. He doesn't say every person needs 8 hours. He says enough. Every person has to see what they need. I know that I, for example, must have a nap in the afternoon. I can sleep 10 hours at night. If I don't get a nap in the afternoon, my whole afternoon night is shot. I don't know why, but that's the way I am. As many hours as I get a night, I also need a half hour in the afternoon. I don't know. It took me a few years to figure that out, and I figured it out. And I know the hours which I need, and I try to get them. You don't always succeed. But if you lead a normal lifestyle, you should have reserves. So if you have a night that you have a wedding, and the next morning you have to get up early, shouldn't knock you out. If we're living where we're constantly on our cup of coffee, and we're just barely making it through the day, you know, we're half living life. And that's our own choice. I don't care. The problem is that it affects our marriage, which automatically affects our kids. That's what we're discussing here. Yeah?
First of all, how much sleep do you have around night?
As much as I can.
It seems like you never really get any sleep.
No, I do. It's a facade. There are days that I sleep 2 hours in the afternoon. So if you see me leaving here at midnight or at 1, and then I have to be up at 6:30, so I got, 5.5 hours at night? I could still get 2 hours in the afternoon. So I'll cut other corners to get to sleep in the afternoon.
So,
if I could, you know, not always, but usually.
Goldberg, at least once a week, generally, says, like, if you only need 6 hours of sleep, you get 6 hours and 15 minutes, you're like Biddle Torah.
So let me tell you, when I first entered yeshiva, someone quoted to me a Netziv. The Netziv was Chief Rabbi of Elazhin. And they quote in his name that he said, if you sleep an hour less than you had to, you lose 3 hours of learning. For every hour that you need sleep, if you don't get it, then you're losing three times the equivalent in learning. So I mentioned this to my chavrusa, and he said a very nice thought. He said, turns out that if you slept an extra hour, you lost 1 hour. If you slept an hour less, you lost 3 hours. So when in doubt, better to sleep a drop more than a drop less. Makes sense. Think about it.
Can I quote this?
I'm not looking to argue with Rav Goldenberg. I'm not. Rav Goldenberg will agree that you have to sleep what you have to sleep. I don't think we're in disagreement. Talk to him. I don't think he means that you guys have to push yourself to the limit. Not at this stage of the game. And also health-wise, you know, our immune system is down when we're overtired. But the focus of our class, our patients for our kids and our spouses are way down when we don't sleep. And you have periods in your life, Bezrat Hashem, you guys should merit to have many, where you'll have a newborn baby, and for the first few months, possibly, they won't let you sleep at night. So I could tell you that me and my wife took shifts. I'd go to sleep like at 8, 9 o'clock at night, and I'd take the shift from like 2, 3 in the morning, and I had many things I could tell you, dapim that I learned with each child in my hands, the first few weeks after they were born. And I'd learn it's such a beautiful time, 3 o'clock in the morning, if you went to sleep at 9 o'clock, then 3 o'clock is a nice time. And I'd sit in the peace and quiet and learn with the baby at hand, rocking him back and forth. You could do a lot at that time. I mean, you could do a lot on Facebook, I know, but you could also learn a lot. Yes?
Have you heard of the idea that I'm asleep before, an hour of sleep before, until like 2?
I don't know. My wife's grandfather says it. My mother said it to me once. See what works for you. I wouldn't work with theories. Be practical. See. Different people in different stages in life require different time. Different amount of times of sleep. If it works, it works. What do you care why? So we're talking about atmosphere. And how do Chazal call the holidays? They call them Mo'ed. That's what's called in the Torah. What does Mo'ed mean? A set time. And Chazal gave us mitzvos when it comes to the Mo'ed. We're supposed to buy sweets for the kids. We're supposed to buy jewelry for the wife. We're supposed to buy good meat for ourselves and wine. Every person according to what they enjoy. The atmosphere that we create in the house isn't just about what happens on the Yom Tov, it's about the preparations. It's about how we react to things. What we show our children. We had a student here who was so impoverished, he became a ger with children, and they used to collect food from the garbage and clothing. And when he came to Machon Meir, his children were sleeping on the floor. When we found out about it, we arranged beds for them. And he once told me how his night ends, how he'd go to sleep at night. He'd go to his wallet and take out a few coins from the small 5 agurot, 10 agurot pieces, and he'd prepare it with his tefillin and siddur for the next morning, and he'd say, he said to me, you know, I feel the holiness of shul beginning before I go to sleep when I set aside the money I'm going to give for tzedakah the next morning. And this is what his children saw. They weren't up at 5 o'clock in the morning to see him go to shul. But they were up when he was going to sleep and preparing his talis and his tefillin and his siddur and his 3 coins that he could afford to give to tzedakah the next morning. He should know he has tremendous success with his children. Didn't know Hebrew. I don't know if he still knows how to read Hebrew. Doesn't know almost anything. He's comes from a place where he grew up a complete atheist. He came to Israel for different reasons, not even to become Jewish. And he was working here, not making ends meet. And then he ended up deciding he wants to become Jewish. And his success doesn't revolve around money, because he doesn't have any. His wife is ill. He himself was hurt. They had all their papers stolen. They had a really rough time. They couldn't even do the gear or get citizenship or get medical insurance because they had all their papers stolen when they first came here. But their children, they would walk with their children sometimes for 2 hours just to get to the Kotel, because they told their children, this is the holiest place we can be, so it's worth walking 2 hours. And they go. That's atmosphere. That's it. You're showing your children what's important. And they prepare for the trip. It was a journey, Aliyah LaRegel. We had in my hometown a guy who lost his job and couldn't find another job. But every morning he'd get up at 5 o'clock and go to Davin and leave the house as though he was going to work. Kids didn't, I don't know if till today the kids know he doesn't have a job. And his kids would collect money for tzedakah. And when they'd fill up the pushka, he'd call the tzedakah organization and he'd say, I want you to come and pick up my children's donation. And the head of the organization, a friend of mine, would tell him, why don't you mail in a check, or why don't you send the kids over? And he'd say, no, because in my family we value every penny we put into that pushka, and my children deserve the Derech Eretz that you'll send a messenger down and show them that their donation is valuable, that you come and pick it up from them. There are different things that we can do to show our children what's important. And a lot of it is about setting a certain atmosphere. When do we start preparing for Shabbos? What do we tell our children about Shabbos? A lot of the people who are our parents' age don't keep Shabbos. And Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky once said the reason behind it was that their parents, who made it out of the Holocaust and kept Shabbos at all costs, would come home on Friday knowing that they might be fired Sunday because they didn't show up to work on Shabbos. And they didn't show up to work on Shabbos. But when they came home Friday afternoon knowing that they might be fired Sunday, they'd come home and they'd say the following sentence: "Siz shver tzayin yid." It's tough to be a Jew. That's how they'd enter Shabbos. We can't judge them. I don't know if any of us are on their level. To come home Friday, keep Shabbos, knowing that you might lose your job Sunday and you have hungry mouths to feed. They did it. But they did it with a sigh. And what their children saw was that sentence, which was a common sentence even when I was growing up. It's difficult to be a Jew. When a child hears that entering Shabbos, he thinks to himself, why should I? And if Shabbos after Shabbos, that's what he thinks and that's what he hears, at some point he might come to the conclusion, well, then I won't. Which many of them did. People whose parents did everything to keep Shabbos. But what was the atmosphere? I'm not blaming them. I have no right to judge them. They're people who I feel dwarfed when I think of what they stood up to. I'm just quoting it as an example of something we should learn from. When we think about meals, we have to know that we can make a meal, a simple weekday meal, and especially a Shabbos meal, into a special experience with our kids. It depends on what we do at the meals. Very often you have kids that demand your attention. So you sit at the meal, and your eldest son is pulling your daughter's pigtails. Boing, boing, boing. And you say, Chaim, stop pulling her pigtails. He stops pulling her pigtails, looks into his plate, and suddenly feels water trickling down his back. Chava, don't pour water down his back. But he pulled my pigtails. But she poured water down my back. The meals can start seeming like Abbott and Costello scene, right? Believe me, in the best of homes. We have to think how to balance things, sometimes where to sit different kids. And we also have to try and avoid making the meals a time for chinuch. You have the rest of the day to deal with chinuch. Try and have at least one meal, if not one meal a day, at least one time for meals, like on Shabbos, where you're not focused on chinuch. Where you're not telling the kids, stop picking your nose, stop biting your nails, stop pulling your hair, stop pouring water down his back. No. Even though they have to hear it, and you might have to be a peacekeeper, but there is a peacekeeper who's telling them what to do, and there's a peacekeeper who picks them up, gives them a kiss, and puts them down on another seat where they're not pulling one another's hair. Shabbos is a time to think about doing it that way. We have to think of, how can I make this into the special time where I won't be dealing with chinuch, I will not be dealing with other points, and I will not be dealing with my issues with my spouse, coming down to binyan habayit. Couples have to make up an agreement that Shabbos they won't deal with issues. Issues can be dealt with around the week. They want to deal with issues on Shabbos, let them deal with it in their bedroom. But let the Shabbos meals be a haven where we focus on growth, where we focus on singing, where our kids can enjoy the atmosphere of Shabbos. Yeah.
What is chinuch?
Chinuch, education. There's a better word. What's a better word for chinuch? It's really teaching them how to behave.
Discipline.
Okay. It deserves a whole class, understanding the word chinuch, and I don't know one word in English that explains chinuch. It's about, chinuch literally means getting him started on the right path. That's what chinuch really means. But that needs elaboration. So our jobs as parents is, we're called mechanchim, our job is chanoch lanar. Chanoch lanar doesn't mean educate, it doesn't mean discipline, it means get him started on the right path. That's our job as parents. Now, that needs elaboration for a whole class. But when we speak about chinuch, that's what we're talking about. It includes partial discipline, partial education, partial love, partial teaching them how to mimic. It's a lot of things. It's not only one thing. So we also have to think of special things, and we don't have to do what everyone else does. My son came home last year. I came home one day and said, we learned what's a kosher fish. So I said, really, what's a kosher fish? So he says, it has fins and scales. I said, what are scales? So he said, it has a little thing on its skin on the outside. And I said, what are fins? He said, that's what swims it. I said, do you have any idea what you're talking about? He said, no. I said, okay, so let's go to the shuk and buy us a fish. So my wife wasn't very happy. My wife didn't want a live fish in her living room. She was right. But we did it, she agreed. We went out to the shuk, but, and here's the but. We didn't just go out to the shuk. We made up 3 days in advance, and 3 days we're going to the shuk to buy a fish, so we'll see what fins and scales are. For 3 days they were jumping out of their skin waiting to go to the shuk. We could have gone that day. But no, the anticipation. The whole house was buzzing around the fish we're going to buy in 3 days. 2 days, all the neighbors knew. By the time we came home, we had everyone standing out there on their porches waiting to see our fish. We had, like, Aliala Regel. All the kids were coming to pet the fish, to pick up the fish, and then who dares touch him? And, okay. So you take something very small, you invest 20 shekel, you go and buy a fish. They have a huge outing going to the shuk. They're going to remember what fins and scales, what a kosher fish is all about. And they have a beautiful afternoon and a beautiful adventure learning something Jewish. That night the fish died. Probably my fault.
You let the kids torture the fish last year. So they yelled at you for 25 minutes of this.
So we told them that the fish missed its home aquarium. We threw it out that night and told them a story. They don't have to deal with death at such a young age. But you have to be original. I mean, there are things that are perfectly kosher, and when we speak about an atmosphere, so we're talking about a general atmosphere in the home, which parents have to aspire to, an atmosphere at special occasions, like on Shabbos and Yom Tov, which we can build up to. Part of it is how we dress, that the children have clothing for Shabbos, that we wear white shirts for Shabbos, and that's something you guys should get into the habit of doing now, and if you want, I have a gemach. We try to help guys who don't have white shirts get them for practically free. There was in this generation, and I'm sorry I'm not taking questions now because we're basically out of time, there was a Torah giant who said that his parents taught him how to value Torah with the following story. His mother had a dress that she was saving for Yom Tov. A new dress she got, and Yom Tov was 2 weeks away. And he came home and he told her he finished a tractate in yeshiva. She said, "You did a siyum today? That's amazing." She went and set the table with Shabbos, the Shabbos tablecloth, took out all the Shabbos silverware, told him, "In honor of this, I have to wear the special dress I had for Yom Tov. This is what's important." Went and put on the special dress, and they made a special festive meal. He saw, "Wow, look what my parents say about that I finished a tractate." And he said that one time, the way his mother reacted, she was glowing. She wasn't faking it. She showed him, "This is what's important to me." Last night, I had to visit someone, and I knocked on the door, and they're making avdallah. So they opened the door and asked me to sit on the side, and they're making avdallah. And I saw the most beautiful avdallah I've ever seen in my life. They had the table set like for a Shabbos meal, the way it says in Halacha. We should all really do that. The table was set beautifully. The Shabbos candles were relit. You had candelabras lit, aside from the Avdallah candle. And they sat there making Avdallah, which was about to lead into the fourth meal, which accompanies Shabbos, that we say goodbye to the Shabbos queen that leaves us. I never saw something like that. I'm not saying everyone should do it. You'll see many different beautiful ideas. But each one in each home gives that atmosphere. We'll conclude with one story that goes a little different than you'd expect it to go. The chief rabbi in one of the towns in Europe, his name was Rav Soloveitchik. I don't know if you guys heard of him. He's well known for his brilliant works in Talmud, and he was well respected. And people who couldn't afford to have children, or women who had children out of wedlock, would very often leave babies at his doorstep, and his house was a miniature orphanage. Literally, they brought up kids. He was the rabbi. He got a stipend from the town, and it was used basically to bring up everyone's kids. I mean, people literally left kids at his doorstep because they didn't have what to feed them. And his son recalls what Friday night was like by them. So the father is the most respected man in town, has a long black coat, long beard. Everyone comes to him with their questions. Friday night, he's in charge of the services. He gives the speech. And at the end of the prayer, the people accompany him home. He goes home and closes the door behind him. Now he's just switched roles from being chief rabbi to being father of the house. The kids would line up. He'd get on all fours, and they'd grab his tailcoat and go giddy up all around the house. And that was how they'd begin the Shabbos every Friday night. Outside, the coat was because he was the rabbi of the town. Inside the house, for the kids, that was the reins by which they drew their father and they'd ride around the house. We have to know that we have to speak the children's language. This story Rav Arzachovitz told me, the Rav Arzachovitz I quoted earlier, when he had a grandson over and we were talking Divrei Torah, and the grandson was about 2.5, and every 2 minutes the kid would jump up and knock his yarmulke off his head. And he'd smile and say, "You shouldn't do that," and pick up his yarmulke and put it back on his head. And at some point his wife said, "I'm going to patch him if he does it again." So he said, "No, he doesn't know better. And that's his Onik Shabbos. That's how he enjoys Shabbos." And then he told me this story. So I'm not saying we let our kids get away with hitting us on the head, no. But I am saying that we have to think how to give a special atmosphere. You guys don't have to be original when it comes to Shabbos and Yom Tov. Quite the contrary. I want you to be traditional. Go see other homes And you should know that this is the key, the way we began the learning tonight. This is one of the major keys that will define how your kids feel about Judaism. What your Shabbos table looks like. What atmosphere is in your home on Shabbos. And to sum up what we discussed tonight, the atmosphere, the Kiddush and Avdallah, the song, the sleep, coming into Shabbos, maybe taking a nap Friday afternoon, maybe getting enough sleep Thursday night so that you can invest properly on Shabbos. Having special foods on Shabbos. Having time in the meals for each child. Focusing on avoiding reprimanding during the meals. Having the meals in a way that as much as possible we invest in the children and in giving them love and giving them a special time. And then we also mentioned trying to take special times, like when a child finishes a masechet. If you'll come to our house now, you'll see there's a big sign on the door that says Mazel Tov. So the neighbors are asking, what happened? We had a baby 4 months ago. So the answer is, my son finished Parshas Bereishis. So when he was away, gone, it's the first Parsha he finished. I told my wife, let's get the kids together. We'll take cardboard and we'll write Mazel Tov. We'll make big signs. So he recognizes that we feel it's special. We made a special event of it. It's important to show our kids what we value and try to find other things other than Shabbos and Yom Tov. Maybe every night, the meal you guys have with your family, or every afternoon, whatever meal works with you, try to have set times where you agree with your spouse. At this time, we don't reprimand. At this time, we focus on building the atmosphere, on building the children. Bezat Hashem, we should have nachas together. Those of you who wish to stick around, we'll do a little bit of chassidus.